One moment. Okay, well, I'd like to welcome everyone officially. Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. Welcome to the new GTLD Subsequent Procedures Working Group call on the 28th of May, 2019. In the interest of time, there will be no roll call. Attendance will be taken via the Zoom room. So if you're only on the audio bridge today, would you please let yourself be known now?
Sorry, this is Caboose Arasam. I'm only on audio bridge for the time being. Thank you.
Great. Thanks, Caboose. That is noted. And as a reminder to all participants, if you would please state your name before speaking for transcription purposes, and please keep your phones and microphones on mute when not speaking to avoid any background noise. Also, as a friendly reminder to view the documents being shared during today's meeting, if you would please direct yourself to the top of the shared screen, you will see an option that says View Options. Please click on the drop-down arrow, and you will then direct yourself between Julie Hedlund and Steve Chan's documents today. With this, I'll hand the meeting back over to Jeff Newman.
Thank you, Michelle. Welcome, everyone. So I hope everyone is that had a holiday yesterday, enjoyed their holiday off. I know it was not a holiday all around the world, but certainly for several countries it was. And I hope everyone's all ready to jump right in. So today's agenda, like previous ones, are to just continue through the overall issues. The topics that we have for today will be the application submission limits and the accreditation programs, which we are really now calling RSP pre-approval. And we'll talk about that, why that is coming up. That's pretty much the agenda, other than our normal check to see if there's any updated statements of interest. So any other business at this point? Does anyone want to suggest anything? I suppose we could add just a brief mention at the end of what our schedule or what the sessions are at ICANN and what our tentative schedule is, at least until the final one comes out. I believe early next week should be the final one. Okay, not seeing any hands. Great. So why don't I ask to see if there are any changes to statements of interest that anyone would like to report? Apparently Christopher has his hand up, so I will go to Christopher, please.
Hi, thank you everybody. Christopher Wilkinson for the record. Jeff, and any other business, I would appreciate if somebody, presumably staff, would give the meeting an update on the board's decision regarding .Amazon. Thank you.
Christopher, if I can defer that till a work track 5 call, since that's more on the geographic names, I'm going to just, and I know we have some of the work track 5 leads here. So, or at least I think we do, we have Anna. So I'm going to ask that we defer that to work track 5, if that's okay.
Well, that's okay for me, but I just want to point out that should it be the case that anybody on the PDP thinks that this might be a precedent, it would have very far-reaching consequences way beyond Work Track 5. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Christopher. Well, we'll defer that to Work Track 5 and see what discussion the leaders want to have, if any, on that. Okay. So with that said, I didn't see, I think I did ask, but I didn't see, just to confirm, any changes to statements of interest. I'll just ask again, just to make sure. Okay, I'm not seeing any, so why don't we go to the first topic, which is application submission limits, which is 2.2.5. There's a link to the Google Doc, which was just highlighted on one of the screens, and I'm going to, on Julie's screen, but I'm now going to Steve's Steve's list, so, or Steve's document. So if everybody hopefully can see that or click onto the Google Doc. And for everyone to get there. Great. So there are a couple or four policy goals that we've kind of gleaned from the comments. And I know that there are a couple diverging views. So, but let me just start with the policy goals. So the first one was, if we as a group decided to set any limits, and this is both or either limits on how many applications ICANN could accept in any given round cumulatively. And then the second part is how many applications from any one individual applicant or I should say person or entity. So if there are any limits, we agreed from a policy perspective, there needs to be a clear rationale for establishing the limits. As a working group, we agreed that any limitations must be operationally feasible to implement. So it's not just, you know, setting the policy, but having some way to enforce it. The third policy was that if there are any limits on the overall applications or on the number of applications any entity could submit, the policy must be fair to all applicants. And of course, any policy we develop should support competition and consumer choice. So with all of that said, all of the comments that we got in from both community comment number one, comments to the initial report, except for two, said that they did not support any overall limits on the number of applications in total per round, or did not support, or I should say, and did not support any limitations from any individual person or entity. The two comments that we got in that did not support, or I should say that did support placing limits, were comments from the a group that called themselves the Public Interest Community, and a separate comment filed by Christopher Wilkinson. So I see Kathy has her hand raised, so I'll let Kathy speak, but I also want everyone to just think about, you know, what their position is on this and whether there's anything other than what we have stated. So Kathy, please.
Yeah, thanks, Jeff. This is Kathy Kleiman. Hi, everybody. So there is, and I apologize, my son just decided to ring in the background. Before we get to the details, Jeff, and of course I have a lot to share on that, a question about the policy goals. I see a policy goal that the policy must be fair to all applicants. Shouldn't there be a policy goal that the policy goal has to be fair to the world? And here I'm thinking that there is a fixed number of new GTLDs we can enter into the root. And if someone remembers what that number is, I really appreciate it. I know ESSAC looked at it and others looked at it as well. But at the end of the day, it's a zero-sum game. There's only so many that we can add. And so distribution of GTLDs to applicants around the world when they have the ability and the interest, and that interest is tied with the ability to raise funds, is critical. So shouldn't we have one more policy goal about fairness, not just to applicants, but to everyone else? Thanks.
Okay, thanks, Kathy. Just to, while I wait, and I see that there's some comments in the chat, so the ESSAC, so we sent out a question to the technical community, which was comprised of the ESSAC, the Office of the Chief Technology Officer of ICANN, so that's OCTO is what it's called. We sent it to the Root servers, or sorry, the RSAC, and there may have been someone else that we sent it to, and Steve or someone or Emily could correct me I think there was another group. But at the end of the day, what we got back was that there was no upper limit on the number of TLDs that could be in the root. There was a scale at which domains could be, or top-level domains could be added to the root. So they basically sent us like kind of sliding scale that said, you know, so many could be added from a root level. And it was kind of, it scaled up on a per month basis. And it was really a very high scale. So one that even if, as you said in previous calls, that there could be as many as 20,000, certainly nothing would be higher than that. Or that number is doesn't remotely reach the close level of that scale. So there was no...
20,000 what?
What you said, 20,000 applications. I'm just quoting from a previous, right?
Yeah.
No, there was no number of top-level domains that the ESSAC or the root service had in their documentation, only a number that could be added within a given year, and that slid up. But then just to read some of the comments, it says that, let me go to, Donna said, not sure how we can make anything fair to the world. That's a pretty tough ask. Ruben says there's no real limit, just numbers were speculated and those were deemed as safe. It's a plus one to Ruben's from Catherine. Whoops, people are adding comments. Ruben says fair to the world, sounds like world peace for me. Anne says, I think we are back to the ultimate question of what's in the global interest. I know I have noted before that technically the GNSO is not required to take the public global public interest into account, but Kathy's question raises this pretty squarely. And Donna says, isn't fair to the world is captured in the policy, should support competition and consumer choice. Ruben says, for reference.br uses the same technology used to serve the root and currently has 4 million delegations. Okay. So where were
left... Can I respond briefly, Jeff?
Yes, sure. Let me just...
Okay. Cool. Because if we look at the comments that talk about the Global South and concerns for the Global South, and again, we haven't even reached application limits, just the question of policy here. I think we know that there are many, many comments that are concerned about the Global South, that are concerned about future applicants, the applicants that don't exist yet, and making sure that they have opportunity and ability to enter, to join future rounds. And so if we, so again, one of the policies here should be application limits early on to protect the ability of others to apply, particularly to apply later on, particularly because of the dominance of Western Europe and North America. So it seems like a fair policy goal. Thanks.
Jeff, can I have a comment?
Yeah, was that Cavus? Yes.
Yes, that is me. I'm sorry, still I'm not connected. Yes, these two questions that you mentioned, they are interconnected and interrelated to each other. And they also interrelated to the other questions that you have already discussed, and that is the periodicity of the application. If you have the choice to have 6 months and then stop, and start again after 6 months, or you have continuous. It depends on this. If you start with 6 months, for instance, and then I will see that in the next 6 months I don't have any opportunity, I do as much as I can based on my financial capabilities and so on and so forth, because I may be worried that I would not be able to do anything in the second period of 6 months, which is a silent period. So I put as much as possible. This is number one. But the first question you should reply, what is the processing capability of ICANN? If they cannot process, there would be a backlog accumulated. And how this backlog accumulated will be absorbed? This is one question should be replied. And the other is speculations by some people. they speculate the things and make the life difficult for the others. If there are many applications from one or two or several sources, and then I cannot process them in time and will be backlog accumulated, the other one coming after them, they will be beyond the backlog and they will not be processed. This is something that I have been encountered for other areas when there are applications. But there are so many applications from one or two or three. The others, they do not have sufficient opportunity to apply. So you have to treat these three questions together. They are not separate. First question is applied. What is the capability of the ICANN? Then based on that, you put processing time. That means ICANN is obliged to process within 6 months or 5 months. This has not been deployed. Simply one or two people, community, without knowing their name, saying that, no, we don't need any limit here. You don't need any limit there. They should know the consequence of that. But that consequence has not been studied. Thank you.
Okay, this is Jeff. So I do want to respond. So, yes, this topic does relate to others. That's why it's in the overall issues, right? Because it does impact other aspects. But the first thing I want to draw people's attention to is there was a comment filed by ICANN.org, and in their comment, they stated that there is not a limit on the number of applications they could process and that they would scale up to meet whatever the demand was. So I don't think it's fair for us to take anything other than that comment the way it is without trying to read into that, you know, whether we think that comment is makes sense or not. So as one of the co-chairs of this group, I have to say that we do have to take ICANN at its word. And so I do not believe that the processing capability is something that we need to consider from at least an ICANN.org perspective. I see Christopher with his hand raised. So Christopher, and let's try to keep our comments, if we can, to under 2 minutes. Thanks.
Well, Christopher Wilkinson again. First of all, look, I've worked extensively in large organizations dealing with multiple applications. If ICANN thinks that there is no limit, basically they're saying that they can outsource the evaluation to third parties, some of whom may indeed prove to be unaccountable. And the quality of evaluation will decline, even if they hit the deadlines. I'm not convinced. Basically, I'm just not convinced. Secondly, I take very much the point that the two issues are related. And thirdly, and most important, there is a suspicion based on the performance of certain registrars in the last round, who should never have been allowed to function as registries in the first place, because of the abuse of the vertical integration decision. There are registrars who on the previous round applied for very large numbers. If you're gonna have entities with external financing on a speculative basis, applying for large and numbers of top level domains, you've basically got a cyber squatting situation. I would characterize it as cyber squatting the English dictionary. I'm quite opposed to that approach. You've got to, particularly as at some juncture, some of these speculative applications, if they're delegated, will not be used for the foreseeable future. We've got to think in terms of 20 years ahead. We've got to think in terms of, as several people have said, fairness between present and future applicants. and avoid speculation and of large numbers of words and names.
All right, thank you.
You've got it. Thank you.
Thank you, Christopher. All right. Look, I know that, and I'm not trying to cut off discussion, but I really think that we have to keep the discussion on processing confined to what I, especially when we're discussing ICANN.org's capacity, we have to keep it at their word, at their comment. And I think Steve just posted, so hopefully everyone can see it, that what they say is ICANN.org is capable of scaling in accordance to the processing volumes and timelines in the applicant guidebook to meet demands of a subsequent procedure for introducing additional new GTLDs, be it around or ongoing. This would be a minimum processing capacity, depending on the consensus policy recommendations adopted, as well as the implementation guidance for subsequent procedures. ICANN.org would likely be able to exceed this processing volume. So I really don't think as a, and I'm going to go out on a limb and say that from the leadership perspective, we really should not be commenting on, you know, whether we accept ICANN.org's statement or not. It really should just be accepted at that, at face value. I really believe we should do that. So other than the people that have spoken up and the comments we've received, and we've received a number of comments, and I can't scroll through this document that's up on, but Steve's doing it for me. You had support from on no limitations from the ALAC, Brand Registry Group, Business Constituency, XYZ, New Star, Fairwinds, Registry Stakeholder Group, and I'm going as Steve is scrolling, Lamari, Valadeus, and then you had the two comments from that we talked about, Christopher, and from Public Interest Community. Are there any issues here that we have not discussed on this particular, on that particular part of the application limit? And please, I see Kathy and Christopher in the queue.
Yes,
please keep it to under 2 minutes. And also, hopefully it's something new that hasn't been said. Thanks.
Yeah, there is one which has not been discussed. That is the processing regulatory period. If ICANN could not say that, it has an obligation to process the things within 6 months, then we are not addressing the issue properly. We need to have that one as an objective. Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Cavus. Sorry, Kathy. You're next, and then Christopher.
Great. No, that's okay, Jeff. Kathy Kleiman. Okay, so now, you know, we've got the policy issues, which, you know, should be expanded to include, again, not just fairness to applicants, but fairness to the rest of the community and to future applicants. But now to the details of the procedural issues. So as you mentioned, a group led by the Electronic Frontier Foundation also signed on to, as organizations, not individuals, as organizations, by Public Knowledge and the Samuelson Glushko Canadian Internet Policy and Public Interest Clinic, which is run by Michael Geist, who I'm sure you've heard of, plus others, really strongly advocated for limiting applications, that applications by a single company partnership or venture must be limited. There are incumbents in the community, and here I'm just reading, have the time and resources and interest to submit thousands of new GTLD applications. And that's not fair. Strict limits on the number of applications per company and in cooperation with other companies is both fair and allows for adequate oversight. So I checked with Electronic Frontier Foundation, as promised and as in the notes, and they actually advise fewer than 24 applications per company. If it's not too late, we'd like to propose a smaller limit, but they talk about leveling the playing field so that everyone is, so so that new proposals coming in now and in the future from all over the world have a level playing field. I've also researched since last week in telecommunications. We have lots and lots of limits just in the United States at the Federal Communications Commission. We have spectrum aggregation limits, and we have broadcast ownership caps, how many radio and television stations you can own in a market and across the world. So not allowing large players to dominate, basic fairness, protecting the global south, these are all reasons for application limits above and aside from what ICANN can process. We also have to consider what the community can process. There's a real call here, and now you're seeing it across the board from kind of user communities, including representatives of the GAC and representatives of non-commercial and public interest groups, that there's a real concern here, Jeff. Thanks. And the question is how we incorporate that.
Okay, thanks, Kathy. I see Christopher, and then be good to hear from some others. If anyone's got any comments, I'll go back to the chat. So Christopher, please.
Thank you, Christopher Wilkinson, again, for the record. Thank you, Jeff. May I suggest that the comments that have been received in the public consultation, it would be helpful if the staff could ask each commentator whether they have the intention of applying for multiple domains themselves. I've pointed out before that it is inappropriate and rather exotic in this concept that the incumbents have primary voice as to who should be applying for the next round. But just as a conflict of interest exercise, which comments have come from companies and other entities who actually intend to apply for multiple names? Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Christopher. I will note that that question, as you said, has not been asked of any of them. Although I suppose we could also ask the ALAC and the public interest community to see if any of those members are going to apply or support any applications. But I'm not sure as to the value. I mean, I think we can interpret comments that we get from organizations the way we would like to. Greg, please.
Thanks. This is Greg Shatton for the record. And, you know, I for one, am troubled with the tenor of the last few comments. I don't see a need for limiting applications. Or if we are going to limit them, if the concern is about according to EFF, thousands of new applications, then let's limit the number of applications at 999. I think that there are a variety of business models, and to say per se that any of them involve speculation, and I'm no fan of speculation in the namespace, but I don't think we can assume that all uses are quote unquote speculative. And I don't think that we can assume that all interests are quote unquote conflicts of interest. These are all loaded terms, intended to cloud or the discussion or move it in a certain direction. Overall, I would be opposed to any limitation. If we're looking for a compromise, then maybe 999 is a compromise, at least in any given batch. Not overall, but I think that there are more qualitative rather than quantitative issues that should be dealt with. And the idea of kind of saving applications for later, whether it's geo names or some other string, to me just, it's far too manipulative of the market. And of the namespace. I don't think it's something we should be doing. And I see the First Amendment and anti-competitive concerns raised in the chat as well. Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Greg. And Steve, can you go back to the document? So let's see if we can get to some more specifics. So if you look, scroll, okay, so at the bottom of it, so we already talked about the outstanding items. At the bottom, it says action item, ask the public interest communities. So this is the real question, Kathy. So you've actually just introduced a new number, a lower, or you haven't said a specific number, but you said that there was a lower number. So where did the number 24 come from that was in the public interest community? And how do we, if we are to entertain kind of the notion of capping the numbers from a particular company or parent company, subsidiaries, et cetera, how do we objectively get to a number?
It's a good question, Jeff. And there was discussion before we got to 24. And it had to do with the sense, anticipating rounds, that 24 is a lot of applications for a single company, and that would be a fair number. As you can see, EFF's already saying that it's probably if you multiply 24 by a large number of large corporations, you're already getting into a huge number of applications that could have an impact on the Global South, on the level playing field, on the future. But the concern was that there are incumbents who have the time and resources and interest to submit potentially thousands of new GTLD applications. Again, the fairness of unlimited applications for some, and that two doesn't seem to be more than enough for a company in a round that would allow them to expand their GTLDs and not to dominate the DNS resources of the future. So I don't know if that answers your question, but there was a discussion to get to the number 24, which seemed like an awful lot of applications. Thanks.
Okay, thanks, Kathy. Maxime.
Maxime Alzoba, for the record. I believe we need to make the factual based decisions. And to say that, okay, five is it's too much, two is too much, 20 is too much, it should be based on something. And to say more, if we're talking about Global South, for example, in some countries in Asia, you can have more than 10 IDNs in the same country. Yes, that they have lots of different languages. And it's not the reason to say, okay, you are restricted to two languages. That's enough for you. We support Global South, so we effectively prohibit you from having all those IDNs. I'm not sure it's a good idea to limit or based on someone thinks that two is enough. So it should have some kind of justification, not set of beliefs. That's it. Thanks.
Thanks, Maxim. Sorry, it took me a second to get off of mute. I have to mute my line, otherwise we get an echo. So sorry for taking a second there. So I think using Maxim's comment about factual basis, and I see some other things in there about some other comments, some discussion going on about comparing this to broadcast. There's some discussion about ICANN motivation, I think we need to be very careful on. There's Paul says FTC talks about, okay, some more about actual bandwidth limitations. So some good conversation on that. Catherine says, why should we prohibit a company with 44 brands to apply for all of them as a TLD? Greg says, what makes 24 a lot? Cheryl says, not sure how we can assess what is or is not enough for any particular unknown business model in the future in any fact-based way. Okay. So there's a lot of conversation back and forth on this. Really, we are not any further along on this than we were with the comments. It seems like we're still getting, you know, the same comments that we got without any kind of factual basis of how to set a limit, much less how to enforce that. But Kathy, please.
Okay, so now for the first time we're actually discussing limits. So let's discuss what a reasonable limit. We've talked about the policy goals. We've talked about why on a procedural level, on a fairness level, consistent with the policy goals we should be adding, why limits, conceptual limits make sense. We've talked about limits that exist in other related areas of telecom. So now let's talk about limits here. What would be a reasonable limit? 24 has been thrown out as a number that has been discussed by the public interest community and by senior attorneys in the field. Why would anyone need, let me ask, why would anybody need more than 24? And then what's a reasonable limit that then allows us to think about some of the overall processing capabilities of not just ICANN, but the community and the people who will be commenting and the whole process, as well as fairness to future applicants and the Global South. What's a reasonable number? Thanks.
Okay, thanks, Kathy. And there's a lot of hands raised now, so I will go down the list. Donna, please.
Hi, Jeff. Donna Austin from Newstar. Can you hear me okay?
Yep, great. Thanks.
Okay, thanks. I find this conversation difficult to have in isolation because I think there's other parts of this puzzle that come into play as well. So if we're just going to have one more round, then I think it's difficult to set a limit. If we're going to have 10 more rounds, then maybe limits make sense, but only in the sense that if those rounds happen every 6 months or so, not every 10 years or so. What's the cost of the application going to be? Are we staying with 185,000, and is that okay, or are we going to push it up so we, you know, don't have so many applications, or are we going to reduce it, you know, so that we make it fairer for everybody? So I find this conversation difficult to have in isolation because I don't think I thought we were on a pretty good place, that there was, you know, we wouldn't put any restrictions on the limits. But I would be willing to think about whether limits make sense if we're talking about the next 4 or 5 rounds that open every 6 or so months. But if we're talking about application limits for rounds that open every 6 or 7 years, then I wouldn't be in favour of it. So I find that the concept a little bit hard to get my head around at the moment because I think there's other variables to the conversation. Thanks, Jeff.
Okay, thanks, Donna. So there's always going to be lots of variables. That's always true. But if we answer every question on the overall issues, well, it depends on how everything else turns out. We'll never make a decision, right? So I completely understand that. Where we were heading on the rounds discussion was that there will be multiple rounds, and that most of the people supported some sort of formula-based setting of the date for the next round. We haven't necessarily gotten agreement as to whether that means a certain number or percentage have been delegated or a certain number or percentages of applications have been evaluated. That's still TBD. But we are certainly talking about multiple rounds and some predictability as to when the rounds will happen. As far as cost, we're not there yet because, again, everyone's going to say, well, it depends on all these other variables. So we have to at some point start making decisions about these. I completely sympathize with the fact that there's tons of variables but we have to at some point put some stakes in the ground. We can revisit them, but we need to start saying, okay, this is what we want. Greg, please.
Sorry about that, trouble getting off mute. Thanks, Greg Chapman, for the record. I don't think there is a reasonable number to talk about when we're talking about limits. I think the fact that we may have, that some people may have discussed some things does not mean that we've somehow now gotten to a point where we're having a reasonable discussion about limits in the way one has a reasonable discussion about price after determining that a house is going to be sold. There is, at best, you know, we could have a discussion about future criteria. I think so far the discussion has not been evidence-based. If anything, it's been fear-mongering based. The idea that there could be, you know, multiple applicants going after thousands of names, when we had the single largest applicant went after just over 300 names. And that was, you know, a very significant amount of money. At that point, the idea that somebody would triple, that there'd be multiple companies out there that would triple that. Well, I mean, it could happen. And if so, then the question is, what's their market scheme? And if we have, you know, concerns about, you know, speculation or trafficking or just hoarding or cyber squatting at this level or the second level, I think we need to deal with those as such and not by limits. You know, and I see Vanda's comment as well that some applicants from the Global South had to drop out because of, you know, expenses related to challenging rejections. That's an issue that needs to be dealt with directly too, but limits wouldn't really solve that either. You know, limits by themselves, I think, just don't make sense. And at so far, I haven't heard anything, you know, any evidence-based, you know, reason why there should be limits. You know, so, you know, if I hear something persuasive and fact-based, you know, I'll listen to it. I'm still waiting. Thanks.
All right. Thanks. Thanks, Greg. Again, just a reminder, a friendly reminder, let's try to keep our comments as brief as possible so we can get through some more material. I have Anne, Maxime, and then I want to go through the chat and kind of sum up where I think we are. Thanks.
If Anne is speaking, I can't hear her. This is Kathy.
This is Michelle from staff. Anne, I have unmuted your phone line.
Okay, why don't we go to Maxime and then we'll come back to see if Anne's got the issue worked out.
Maxime Alzoba, for the record. Actually, I object to the Kathy's recommendation to go to the justification for particular numbers. To go there, we should first agree that limits, yeah, have some sense at least, because it's kind of a loaded question. We shouldn't answer the number question before we agree that we need to set limits at all. Thanks.
Thanks, Maxim. And then let's go back to Anne, see if we have any issues worked out. Anne, are you able to make your comment? Okay, I'm still not able to hear Anne. And so let me go through some comments on the chat because I think there's a good discussion going on. There was some discussion about... So just going back to Maxim said there's no consensus in the group about limiting. Susan says, what do you mean 24 has been discussed? 24 is proposed by one group without any basis. Paul McGrady says, Kathy, a reasonable number is whatever the free market will bear. Anything else is meddling. Sorry, someone just made a comment, made it scroll on me here. Okay. Greg says, Susan, it's a rhetorical tool to say it's been discussed. Ruben says, so for the record, 24 has not been discussed. Okay, I'm going to skip ahead. Paul McGrady says, round two is supposed to be right after round one, and here we are. Vonda says, I agree with, I think that's supposed to be Paul McGrady, but when you see several applications from South Hemisphere be challenged and lose due to the cost, we may need to think about limits. Ruben says, I think report reflects the current consensus of not establishing limits. Sorry, just a lot of same comments over and over. Donna says, at this point, I'm not in favor of limits. Let's see. Sorry, I just don't want to cover things I've already covered. Let's see, some muting things. Okay. Justine says, speaking personally, I think Global South applications and or middle applicants and or applications which intend to benefit underserved communities are better supported through prioritization, applicant support partnerships, rather than limiting application numbers. There's a couple plus ones to Justine. Kathy says, how many applications are people company considering? It's making me worry. 24 is a lot. Kathy says the 24 number has a basis. It seems reasonable per round. Anne says she's gotten problems with her line comments that a lot of these issues could be solved with establishing priority windows for certain types of applications. Kathy says, as Donna noted, it's not a cap in perpetuity, just for one round. And then imagine one, Maxime says, one big company can have presence worldwide and want different languages. And there's another plus one to Justine. Sorry, a lot of comments. At the end of the day, again, you know, from the comments that we got in, and even on this call, there does not seem to be a consensus of the community asking for some sort of limits. Going with the default of, you know, it's going to happen the same way it happened in the last round, that's where we are. Absent getting this group and the comments and others to agree on some sort of limitation. So, but at this point, there is no agreement on that. So with that said, I have a couple more hands, but please, again, just keep it brief on this topic. I'm going to try to get Anne again. I don't know if Anne's, this is a new hand or the old one, still trying to make a comment. So it's, I have Anne, Kathy, and Christopher, then I'm going to move on. Sorry, and then Vivek. Close the queue and then move on to the next topic. So Anne, let's try one more time. Okay, not hearing anything from Anne. So let's go to Kathy and then Christopher.
Yeah, so this is Kathy. And in an ideal world, I would agree with Justine, possibly, that coupling other mechanisms plus reasonable limits would support Global South and diversity and future applicants. But we really screwed up in the first round in terms of education applicant support. And so it makes thinking about limits all the more. So question for you, Jeff, how do we reflect the depth and breadth of concern that's been raised in this call, which it's, I think is pretty deep coming from an array of the user community, and how do we reflect it so it gets passed on and continues as a discussion topic in the community? Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, I'm Kathy. So, well, ultimately it would be reflected in a minority statement unless, of course, it is... I'm failing to read the consensus of this group. Yes, there have been some strong vocal proponents of limits, but at the end of the day, I don't see any of the groups that filed comments opposing the limits changing their view. The ALAC, which is the official representatives of the user community, has a view against limits. So at this point, Kathy, unless you're able to change minds of the other groups, it would just really be a minority statement at this point. Christopher, then Vivek.
Thank you, Chair. Christopher Wilkinson. Very briefly, I must preface this comment by the fact that I've been in this business in one aspect or another of it for the past 20 years. I do think I know what I'm talking about, but that's irrelevant in this context. But what would be relevant would be that the co-leads and all the members of this group reflect on the international political implications of what we're discussing. You've got to look beyond this bubble of including its quite self-interested incumbents and take a reasoned and sensible view as to how what we do here will be perceived in practice elsewhere. I see very little of that in this group, and it will be trouble in the future for ICANN, not for the group, but for ICANN. Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Christopher. I have Vivek, and then we'll try Anne a last time, see if she's able to get on. So, Vivek.
Thank you, Jeff. Vivek Goyal here for the record. I have a quick question actually for you, Jeff. Given all the discussion we have had now, and you saying that we will revert to default and there be no limit, how does the action item that is noted here, if we do get an answer for it, how will it impact the decision or reverting to default that we have just done? Once we get the answer, are we going to revisit it again and be on the basis of the answer have another round of discussion? If not, then what's the point of having that action item there? Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Vivek. That actually was an action item from the previous calls that we've had with the group that reviewed the comments. But at this point, yes, I think if we get an answer to that, and that answer, that the group wants to discuss this issue again, or wants to do some more research into it, we could discuss it again. But otherwise, if it's we really need to operate by a consensus basis as a group, and it's up to those that want to change the way things are to really try to convince those that are opposed as to why we should take this up again. I know it seems a little draconian to do things this way, but at some point we have to kind of move on and realize that we're not going to get a consensus on any change. So I see Anne and then Vivek's back in. Anne, let me try going to you to see if you have connectivity now.
Okay. Hello, Jeff. Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Oh, my gosh. Okay. That's crazy. Okay. So I'd like to propose something that's sort of a last stab at developing a third alternative, because I see that there's some chat with respect to, possible ways of processing applications that would differ from the last round. That might address some of the concerns that expressed by those that you're referring to as, minority statement. Background-wise, I'll try to keep this short. Certainly, applicant freedom of expression is a principle and a guiding principle of the entire program. And it is, I think, very different from FTC bandwidth, because FTC bandwidth is a much more limited space. However, all these new GTLDs are competing with one another. And what we have is an overarching concern about, you know, some semblance of the public interest. So what I'm wondering is if our issue is not really the question of the speed of processing applications and people not wanting that to be slow and people not wanting the, you know, public interest type applications and individual applications to get stuck in the ICANN system while the big dogs who know how to get things through quickly, you know, and are doing everything they can policy-wise to make sure that, you know, those get through quickly, get ahead of everybody else. Could we somehow, within staff in ICANN, dedicate a unit to a different type of application? The type that is, you know, the individual application or the Global South application, just so that, you know, there's a fairness in the speed with which these types of applications that are coming to market and all competing with each other can be processed. Could we recommend a policy that would address the concerns of the minority that's listed here? By having a dedicated unit internally within ICANN staff.
Okay, thanks, Anne. I see Trang has raised her hand, so let's see if Trang has got a response to that.
Hi, Jeff, this is Trang, and thank you. So, Kathy, Anne, with regards to your last comment, I think it is one of the recommendations from this working group that applications are prioritized for processing. And so it's not like, you know, I can or just pick and choose which applications we want to process first or last. Everything is done via a prioritization process. So if there is a particular group of applications or type of applications that the PDP working group believes should be prioritized for processing, that is certainly a policy recommendation that could be made. And then based on that, we would prioritize the applications for processing appropriately. And the second comment that I wanted to make is that there's been a lot of discussions about ICANN.org's processing capacity. I want to also remind the PDP working group that there is also something called the rate of delegation, which is currently set at 1,000 TODs per year. And so it doesn't really matter how many applications ICANN.org can really process to some extent, because that is currently the limiting rate upon which new GTODs could be added to the route. Thank you.
Yes, thanks, Trang. We did discuss that a little bit earlier. The root servers and SAC and others did file responses, and that 1,000 limit was, according to them, not set by the root servers or the SAC, but was set by ICANN after considering their views. The SAC and RSAC, or I'm forgetting which comments it came in, are now of the view that it is more of a sliding scale, that the 1,000 was kind of an arbitrary limit, that now they believe, given what's happened prior, that it's more of a sliding scale that could increase at a certain rate. So just to correct that, so it's not 1,000 a year at this, at least that's not the recommendation. Now, sure, we as a group could discuss that, but at least the technical community has kind of weighed in on that. The other thing, we do have a subject in here on application processing, which we'll get into. It's a little ways down the line in terms of discussions, but we will be discussing issues about prioritization of processing applications in a later subject. So I do want to just put a stake in the ground to say that is going to come up, not for a little while yet, but that is a topic that we do have. All right. I want to switch gears here at this point to go to the next subject, which is on the pre-approval program, which I know is formerly called accreditation programs. I actually want to would love to change the terminology and forget the fact that we used to reference it as accreditation, because that caused a whole bunch of issues on terminology. And I think once we got past that, we were able to make some progress. But essentially, this was a topic that was first addressed in community comment number 2, and then addressed later on, obviously, in the initial report where some recommendations were made. There were 3 policy goals that we gleaned out of it, and I added a note to discuss a possible 4th. So the first 3 were operationally feasible and appropriate. Efficiencies should be realized in the technical evaluation of registry services without compromising the goals of the program, such as diversity, competition, and security of the DNS. Second policy goal, where a single RSP, which stands for Registry Services Provider, provides registry services for multiple TLD applications, duplicative evaluation and testing should be reduced. A third one is, to the extent that there is testing as part of the pre-approval program, testing must be consistent, objective, and to the extent possible, predictable. And one I propose we add, but obviously it's subject to comment, so please do comment on this, that the RSP program should avoid processes and structures that show undue preference to incumbent RSPs versus prospective RSPs and should be equally available to both. So this was a comment that was made by Google and supported in comments by Mark Monitor, Lamarit, and seemed to have support when we were discussing the comments on subgroup A, which I see the link has now been put in there in the top background documentation section. So my question is, should this be a policy goal? And if it is, that may change some things below where there's high level agreement or not. So what does everyone think of that statement, that the program should avoid processes and structures that show undue preference to incumbent RSPs versus prospective RSPs and should be equally available to both? So I see Anne. I'm not sure if that's a new or old hand, but I see Anne, and then I see Susan and Donna. So let me go to Anne first, see if that's a new hand. Nope. Okay, Susan, please.
Thanks, Jeff. Hi, it's Susan Payne. I'm not sure if it's entirely on the same point, but I think our comments from Valadez probably would support this too. I mean, there were a number of areas where we made the point that we thought it was important that either something shouldn't be done, but if it was, then it should apply both to existing, to sort of incumbents and also to others who perhaps have chosen not to go down the pre-approval path. And again, you know, we made a number of comments that sort of said, you know, there's a need for a kind of equal treatment of all. And I think that would tend to kind of support this kind of comment as well. I think it's very important. You know, we never propose, when we were talking about this in the work track previously, I don't think it was ever an intention that somehow RSPs who have been active already should somehow have a kind of shoe-in for the future and be given a priority and preference. It was more that it was seeking to address the fact that you know, since many people were using the same back-end provider, that they were being asked to repeatedly give the same information multiple times, which was increasing cost and complexity. And, you know, it was about simplifying the process, but it wasn't about cutting anyone out who's able to meet the standards.
Okay, thank you, Susan. So thank you. And that does seem to be in line with the policy statement. I'm going to go to Donna and then read a couple things from the chat.
Thanks, Jeff. Donna Austin from Newstar. So if we're assuming that program means pre-approval program, the RSP pre-approval program, then doesn't it necessitate that what would happen if it is the choice of the those that want to be an RSP, whether they're incumbent or not, that they would have to go through that pre-approval program. And I'm not sure where you get any, you know, undue preference as a result of that. You know, business reality will be that, you know, come a next round, I assume that those that are interested in TLD, when they go looking for their third party provider for a back end, you know, may be looking for someone who's done this before. So, you know, in a business sense, and they are going to have some kind of undue preference, I suppose, because they're tried and true, but somebody coming fresh into the business, that's going to be a little bit more difficult. So I'm not sure that this is necessary if the idea is that the pre-approval program will mean that incumbents and new entrants all have to go through that pre-approval process to be eligible to, you know, for the applicant or whatever, to tick the box to say they have an RSP that's been pre-approved.
Yeah, thanks, Donna. And just to, I guess this is kind of foreshadowing some of the comments, there seemed to be general support for the notion of that this be a voluntary program. So you don't have to be pre-approved in order to be listed in an application for a TLD, but if you're not pre-approved, then you do need to go through the process, and we'll discuss whether the process has to be the same. I think you'll see general support there too, that really the only difference between the pre-approval program and the approval program is a question of timing. So we'll test that theory in a sec, you know, as we go through this. But so if it's a voluntary program where new RSPs and incumbent RSPs can all participate in the pre-approval if they choose to do so, I guess the question then becomes not undue preference in terms of you know, what eventual applicants will choose, right? Because they can use as their own business judgment whether they want to use someone that's tested or that's operated others or not, but more undue influence from ICANN, that they're put on some sort of status higher than the others, I think is really kind of permeates through this. Just to go through Paul's comment, sorry, it just scrolled up on me here. Let's see. Oh, we got a bunch of comments here. Okay. Paul said supports in theory, but would like to tighten up the language to make clear that ICANN doesn't need to change what already works just because incumbent RSPs are already set up to do what's working. May help, Paul, if you kind of submit some language, or I'm not 100% sure what that comment is supposed to say. Sorry. Ann says, okay, so this is still on the previous topic. Jim says, at Paul, we learned at the GDD summit that multiple registries had multiple problems passing PDT, and although we haven't had an update in a few years, there have been close to 40 Ebro triggering incidents in the first few years of the new GTLD program. ICANN decided, however, not to invoke the Ebro at the time. All right, I'm going to skip the discussions on the previous topic. Ann says, wow, Jim, when do we get that report on Ebro triggering events? Seems pretty significant. Susan says, Donna, agree that those who are looking for a provider will make a decision about the weight they give to prior experience. Was viewing this only as intending that those without experience could be approved if they meet the standards. Donna says, I don't think this is a policy goal. It's more of a principle. Okay. Jim says, I believe the last reporting on the Ebro triggering events came from Francisco. Maybe Trang's got some more information. Okay, so yes, Paul, please. You're in the queue. Thanks.
So thanks. This is Paul McGrady for the record. Donna asked me for what my source of statistics are, but I don't know what that question's for. I think that might have been meant to be directed to Jim. All I'm trying to say is that what we don't want is for an RSP that is not currently an incumbent to come in and claim that they have some disadvantage because the incumbent RSPs are already doing things the way ICANN wants them to do things. And so therefore the playing field is not level. In other words, ICANN doesn't have to change the way that it is, what it's expecting from RSPs in order to re-level the playing field for everybody. Hopefully that makes sense. It's what I was trying to convey in the text. Thanks.
Yeah, thanks, Paul. And I think another way of saying it is kind of a comment or concern that was raised by some. We don't want to cater to the lowest common denominator, right? We want to make sure that, yes, we have a level playing field, but there still needs to be a strong basis in security and stability and all the other good stuff. We're trying to, by having a pre-approval program, in essence, we are trying to create a little bit more of a level playing field in the sense that multiple operators will have the opportunity to be pre-approved, whether they're an incumbent or not. So that may actually encourage competition, I think is the goal. Sarah says, due to the number of Ebro triggering incidents that the incumbent RSPs are creating, it's not in the interest of security stability that incumbent RSPs are grandfathered into any new potential RSP program. That's from Sarah Langston. And Sarah, that's a good comment, and that will come up a little bit later in this document, and a plus one from Justine on that. So, okay, so whether this is a principle or a policy goal, I don't think that there's disagreement with the notion of making sure that we don't have anything that, trying to think of a better way to say it, but essentially that we should, our structures and processes should treat all RSPs, whether an incumbent RSP or a new one, in some sort of equitable manner, I think is fair to say. Christopher, please.
Thank you again, Chair Christopher Wilkinson, for the record. I hope you'll be pleased to know that I'm much more relaxed about this aspect of the business, and I appreciate that from the document that's been prepared. I think this is primarily a technical issue, and I don't think this group is really competent to adjudicate on that. Secondly, there is a competition issue. If there are not enough registry service providers worldwide, I think that can be resolved. And thirdly, at the limit, it's a security issue. There will always be more TLDs than registry service providers. There are several other aspects of the internet where this principle is also true, whether it's the internet exchange points or the name servers for the ccTLDs, etc. The security issue, which ICANN is equipped to deal with if they have a look at it, is that beyond a certain point, a registry service provider that is servicing a large number of GTLDs is vulnerable. And we have to be very sure that the security against hacking, against malicious intervention of any kind, that the security aspects of the registry service providers are very carefully assessed and on a permanent basis. But beyond that, go for it.
Thanks.
The world at large will never be able to provide individual registry service providers for the numbers of GTLDs that we've been talking about, even the modest version
Okay. Thanks, Christopher. So just focusing a little bit on, so Maxime says an RSP is only an informal definition now defined in internal ICANN documents. I think Maxime has a good point, and maybe one of the things we'll take as an action item here is to come up with a definition. It's also assumed now that an RSP is one entity, it could be multiple entities, I suppose, that form one RSP or that provide different functions, you know, the five critical functions. With respect to what Christopher refers as a technical issue, I actually do agree. And if you scroll down, Steve, to the outstanding items, let me see where I put it here. Hold on. Actually, it might be further down. Sorry. I don't remember where I put it now. The referrals to other sections. Yeah, this is a long section here. So in the referrals, what I do say is that at the last bullet point, I added this in, again, subject to comment from the group, but essentially to the extent that the working group adopts the notion that all RSPs are evaluated in the same manner using the same processes, except that the pre-approval process happens earlier in time, then all of evaluation requirements should be referred to the applicable sections that we discuss these issues. So 2.7.6, where we discuss security and stability, and 2.7.7, where we discuss applicant reviews, we can defer the technical conversation until we talk about those two sections if that assumption is right, that we're going to apply the same standards, whether you apply in the pre-approval program or whether you wait and submit it with another application. So just looking to see if there are any comments on that. And sorry, Steve, if you can scroll back up, I just wanted to point that out so we didn't get into some of the technical conversations here, but certainly we'll be tackling those to the extent we tackle them for all applications. So going back to the comments, the public comments summary, there was large support for calling this a pre-approval program, there was some support expressed for the idea that the process should have the same technical requirements equal to the technical and operational capabilities evaluation. There was support for that. There was some commenters also supported the consideration of an RSP's overall breadth of registry operator support, while others believe that the measurement of overall breadth of registry operator support will be difficult to assess. So this is the question of when you pre-approve a registry services provider, do you pre-approve them for a certain number of top-level domains? Do you approve them for a certain number of second-level domains within the top-level domains? Are you approving them based on the query traffic of DNS services? All sorts of things that you could, in theory, pre-approve someone on. And there was mixed support in the community about whether this was capable of being, whether ICANN should, or whether it was capable of being tested. We'll note later on, I believe ICANN.org does agree with the notion, however, that the breadth of registry service provider support should be assessed. So we'll get to that in a little bit. Most of the commenters that supported the notion of RSP pre-approval expressed support for the idea that the process should be voluntary. The one exception was the business constituency, where they said that the pre-approval program should be mandatory, but didn't provide any other rationale other than that. We did ask during our discussions to see if there was any more information, but no other information was submitted. There was support from most commenters support from commenters that this program should be self-funded or should be a cost recovery basis. And while there were different perspectives expressed about whether periodic reassessment should be required for pre-approved RSPs, there was some support for the idea that if you did require pre-approved RSPs to be reassessed, then that same requirement to be assessed should also be to RSPs that are not part of the pre-approval program. So if someone decided to not do the pre-approval program, but was approved through the regular normal application process, that if basically the tests or reassessments should be for all and not just for those in the pre-approval program. And in here, I can't, which I think we can confirm. So I just want everyone to make sure that I'm stating this correctly. But ICANN.org seeks confirmation from us that the only difference between the pre-approved RSP and the one that is approved during application evaluation is the timing of when the approval takes place. All criteria and evaluation, and I don't know why they said RST, but it should be RSP testing, are the same. So my comment is, does this have high level agreement? If so, keep here. Anyone disagree with the notion that the only difference is at this point between the pre-approval and the approval of RSPs is a timing issue? Anyone disagree with that? Donna, please.
Thanks, Jeff. Donna Austin from Newstar. So I'm okay with that, the inclusion of that language. But I think RST has a different meaning for ICANN, so you may want to check that. I know RST is an acronym that they use, and it is in connection with this topic. So I think we best check RST before we take it out.
Ah, thanks, Donna. I did not know that. So let me go to Maxime, if it's okay. I'm going to go to Trang because she might be responding to that notion, if that's okay. Trang?
Thank you, Jeff. This is Trang. Yes, RST is, I think, the new rename process for PDT. And if you look at our comments or input in totality, I think you'd see that the suggestion is that as part of this RSP pre-approval program, it be considered not just for the technical evaluation, but that certain aspects of RST or PDT could be performed on a per RSP basis as well. And there are certain, obviously, components of RST or PDT that needs to be done on a per TOD basis, but those components that could be done on a per RSP basis, we also suggested that the RSP program would allow for that as well. So it is correct that that mention is meant to be RST and not RSP. Thank you.
Thanks, Trang. Can you just, or maybe just put in the chat what RST stands for, and I think you said it's the same thing as pre-delegation testing, but maybe not. Is okay, so Christine put it in there. Thanks, Christine. Registry services testing. Is that still only contemplated pre-delegation, or is that ongoing testing? If someone could put that in the chat, just make sure I understand that. All right, while they're putting it, okay, so Donna's saying it may also apply for swapping out an RSP. Got it. Okay, let me go to Maxime.
Maxime Alzoba, for the record. Actually, this term RSP, it just got out of the discussions with ICANN about the procedures for evaluation for the registries from the technological perspective. And since the beginning of conversations, we have a large pool of registries who act as backend providers for themselves, who are under the constant SLA monitoring. I mind you, the measurements are done each minute for the years. So they were considered to be good for the initial pool of RSPs. And I don't see anything like this in the wording we have. Thanks. So basic idea that the backend providers who are quite good to work for many years under the constant SLAs should be regarded as RSPs, as valid RSPs. Thanks.
Thanks, Maxime. Okay, thanks, Maxim. I have Trang and Christine. I don't know, Trang, if your hand's still up or that the other comment. Nope, okay, now I see no hands. Okay, so let me just go to the chat. So there's a link there to the testing process. And sorry, going scrolling down. This, okay, Jim responds on the RSP incidents, which will come up, I think, a little bit more. I know we're getting towards the end of this call, but so we'll be talking about that a little bit more. And Kathy says, is there a limit to the number of front-end registries that a back-end registry can host? All right, I'm going to stop here because I think this is a good stopping point. Definitely take the action item that we need to define RSP, and especially in terms of RST, and whether that testing is a component of the RSP pre-approval program. So that's something that we need to consider. Hopefully we can get some comments on email. And please, I would like to see if we can get through this subject through email and very quickly kind of summing up on the next call and then go to the next subject. So I do agree that the letters RSP and RST are confusing, so we may have to define those terms. Before we get to the end, however, I believe that I've seen a high-level schedule for ICANN 65. I've seen it sent around to a couple different groups. I don't think one was sent around to this list, but from what I have seen, we have sessions that are scheduled sorry, I just had it pulled up and now it's not there. Okay, here it is. We have on day one, we have a couple sessions scheduled for work track 5 in the morning. And then we have work track 5 in the morning. I don't know if I said work track 5. And then for the rest of the subpro, there are a couple sessions that are split between the first day and the second day. We can get some exact times. We can forward that to the list, but do plan on being there to talk about this subject. Do plan on talking about these subjects on the first 2 days. So hopefully you'll get there ready to discuss more information next week on what we will be discussing. Okay, any questions on that? There's still some discussion on the SLA monitoring, which is important. And I'd like to keep that discussion going on the email list, especially as it refers to whether pre-approvals can be removed or whether certain entities should a pre-approval be removed if there are certain violations is certainly an important thing. So definitely keep those conversations going. Maxime, I see your hand up, but I'm not sure if, okay, there's a question on the small working group on the, it's not on the IRT, but on predictability. Yes, there's been not much ongoing on that list, but I plan to stimulate some discussion this week on that. We should get that small group moving a little bit and hopefully relying on others to weigh in. So with that, thank you, everyone. I'm just looking to see if there's anyone that's got any last comments. Nope. Okay, great. Thanks, everyone, and talk to you all.
Thank you all.
Thank you, Jeff. Meeting has been adjourned. Have a great day, everyone.